Chapter 21. Dante's vacuum cleaner had yards and yards of cord. By plugging it into the outlet just inside my apartment door, I could vacuum 3/4 of both our places. Coins wouldn't stay in his pants pockets. I harvested the quarters from between his couch cushions and used them at the laundromat, marrying our loads. It wasn't that he liked looking disheveled, he said. It was that he hated ironing. I set up the board at my place, in front of my TV. Dante wouldn't own a television on principle. Sometimes he'd sneak up from behind and hug me as I ironed. I'd feel his tongue against my neck and hear the sizzle of the hot iron as a single experience. One evening, as I stood unknurling the pocket flaps on his blue shirt, the steam between us, he told me my ironing was a metaphor, that I was pressing chaos out of his life. "I've never loved anyone domestic before," he said. He nicknamed me Home Ec. They gave me first shift at the Grand Union, Monday through Thursday. Checking out people's groceries proved less interesting than developing their photographs. "It's a paycheck," I shrugged, when Mrs. Wing asked me about my job. There was a lot of infighting amongst my co-workers. Women who hadn't created happiness for themselves the way I had. You were always expected to be on someone or another's side. Honest to God, Dante, you can't even keep track of who's not speaking to who. "Who's not speaking to whom," he corrected me. "Well, whatever, I keep my distance." We ate our meals in my kitchen and slept in Dante's bed. Each morning, I chose a recipe from his Vegetarian Epicure cookbook, and each afternoon I trudged back up the hill with the needed ingredients. Dante had been a vegetarian since 1974, when, chewing through a gristly piece of steak, he'd suddenly seen beef for what it was, decaying flesh, and his throat muscles had constricted. Dante called his spitting that mouthful of meat into a napkin an epiphany. When I went to look the word up, his naked pictures, his younger religious self, slid out of the dictionary. For security's sake, I put the photos and the remains of Ma's painting in a shoebox, labeled it insurance papers, and stuck it on the top closet shelf. He'd done nothing less than transform me, I thought. By the time Frost zapped the last of his tomato plants out back, I could go a whole weekend without a cigarette, grill a sweet and sour acorn squash on the hibachi, drive a car, and regulate my orgasms so they'd arrive approximately when I wanted them to. A spiritual event in which the essence of a given object is manifested, as in a sudden flash of recognition, is what the dictionary said under epiphany. Each night we spent together seemed like a kind of spiritual event. It was funny, in a way. Dante had stopped believing but started me up again. He was a gift, a nod, finally, from God, whose hand I thought I recognized in this. And if God was up in heaven, then so, maybe, was Ma, wearing those billowy wings and red high-heeled shoes, smiling down on what Dante and I were creating. Dante kept his home phone number on the school blackboard for any student who needed to use it. Girls called, mostly, with crises involving their friends or boyfriends. They were snippy when they got me instead of him. 2 years in a row, the senior class had dedicated the yearbook to him, a fact that Dante said made other teachers jealous. Given the choice, he said, he preferred his students to the bunch of old farts in the teacher's room who could only talk about life insurance, not life. Just watching Dante type a ditto in his underwear or hearing his soft, reasonable voice with one of those jilted sophomores was enough to fill me up. He corrected his students' papers at the kitchen table, writing page-long reactions in green ink. Red correction marks, he said, were too stultifying. Dante's teaching used him up. Each night he'd set his alarm, fall naked into bed, and ask for a back rub. "Ah, you missed your calling," he said one night. What? You're medium. Watercolor. You should work in clay with that touch of yours. What are you stopping for? It had slipped my mind that I was supposed to be a frustrated painter. I needed his spine bumps and made a mental list of the lies I'd told him. Birth control, ex-boyfriend, watercolors. Omissions like Kippy and my breakdown weren't exactly the same as lies, I reasoned. Everyone in the world kept secrets. The back rubs never failed to bring Dante back to life. Everything we did, every place he touched, he asked first. Okay, this, how about here? A play in two acts, Dante called our lovemaking. Me first, and him second was the way we both liked it best. So that I could relax, happy and satisfied, and kiss his eyelids, his mouth, during the in and out, the slow circles his hips made. Sometimes he laughed as he came. Sometimes he winced and grabbed handfuls of sheets. Wait. Stay in, I'd say sometimes, holding my hand against the small of his back. I was scared of both the truth and the lies. I feared even the name of it. Withdrawal. Sex and love gave me insomnia. After he fell asleep, I'd get up and pace in the dark, convincing myself as I navigated around the silhouettes of furniture that I wouldn't lose him, that I'd turned the corner of my old life on loss. One night, during the pacing and nail-biting, I tripped over a chair leg, whacked my toe a good one. I got back in bed, ignoring my pain, feeling in the dark for proof he was real, the hair on his chest, his breath against my fingertips, the wet spot we had made. Is it broken? I asked the doctor who looked at my toe two afternoons later. Yes, it is. So what do I do? Nothing. Nothing was what I was doing about birth control, too. If you waited and called Planned Parenthood after hours, you didn't have to talk to anybody. You got pre-taped advice from some woman's know-it-all voice. And of course, the voice said, when you take no precautions, you are making a decision as well. My shift at the supermarket ended at 3 p.m., and Dante was usually finished by 4. By October, we'd begun the habit of meeting at the library downtown and hiking the hill together. One afternoon, waiting for him, I spotted an oversized paperback, Our Bodies, Ourselves. It was the black-and-white cover photo that drew me to it. Two happy protesters holding up a sign, Women Unite. One woman was my age, the other 70 or so. That day at the grocery store, there'd been a big fight amongst the cashiers. Tandy, who was getting married that spring, had, in the midst of the battle, uninvited two of the others to be her bridesmaids. Bitch! They shouted at each other from their respective registers. Bitch! All through the first chapter of Our Bodies, Ourselves, I kept closing the book and looking at those united women. I sat back in the chair, missing Grandma. We took turns writing or calling each other every other week, but our letters and conversations were polite and constipated. For Grandma, my bad past was water under the bridge, or that business a while back. Listening to us talk, you'd have no indication death or sex or craziness existed. The women in the book hugged each other, played clarinets, made love to their balding boyfriends. I was 25 years old, sitting in the Montpelier Library waiting for the man I loved and who loved me back. But I was also my obese self pouting up in my bedroom at Grandma's. My 6-year-old self in dungarees, riding with my father through the wet blur of a car wash. An 8th grader in Jack Spite's MG, my hair whipping in the wind on the way to that dog pound to be destroyed. Except he hadn't destroyed me after all. Dante had come along and unraped me. There seemed no good way to tell Grandma that. Who was Grandma beyond arthritis and rosary beads, anyway? Who had she been in bed with her husband? Women, unite. That idea shook me up. Boo, Dante whispered. He grabbed my hand and led me toward the door. Hold on, I said. I want to check this book out. At the circulation desk, he gave me a quick kiss. Oh, and just for the record, he said, it's, I want to check out this book. You don't split your verb phrase. On my day off, I read Our Bodies, Ourselves, cover to cover. I had no other women to discuss Dante with, no one to tell me if keeping all my secrets from him was wise or dangerous. I ached for a woman friend. Hello? It was Tandy's fiancé, Rusty. They were living together, same as Dante and me. One time in the store, Rusty had ripped open a bag of M&Ms at my register and started shooting them at Tandy while she checked out customers. She thought it was funny. According to another cashier, Tandy had had an abortion. Is Tandy there? I asked. This is Dolores from work. Just a second. His hand squashed against the receiver, making a sound like farting. She's not here right now, he said. Dear Grandma, I began. The letter came out nonstop. I'm not sure where to begin this, but I have some news. I'll just come out with it. I'm in love. His name is Dante, and he's a high school teacher here in Montpelier. We don't have any plans yet, but I'm hoping it will come to that. You put up with a lot from me when I was so sad and sick, and I wanted you to share my happiness with me, too. We're planning to visit you for Christmas, if that's okay. I hope that you'll learn to love him. He's kind to me. And so much fun. Grandma, how did you and Grandpa fall in love? Were you sure about him when you married him, or did you have doubts? When we visit, I'd like to sit down with you and ask you about your life. I hope these questions don't make you uncomfortable. I wouldn't have written it if I didn't feel so strongly about these things. If you would like to answer any of my questions, please write back. Or call me on the phone, collect. Being in love with Dante is scary and wonderful. I love you very much. In the next few weeks, Dante kept picking up Our Bodies, Ourselves, but it didn't hold his interest. At work, Tandy and the other cashiers made up. The bridesmaids were reinstated. From their stations, they discussed wedding preparations, calling past me as I straightened up the already neat rows of lifesavers and tabloids, waiting for customers. Overdue notices from the library began to appear in the mail, and bills and circulars, but no word from Grandma. One afternoon at work, I forgot Grandma's face when I tried to picture her. All I could see was Mrs. Wing. I kept promising myself I'd return the book as soon as I heard from Grandma. Maybe my letter had gotten lost in the mail, I reasoned. Maybe someone like me had stolen it before it got to her. Are we on for Christmas at your grandmother's or not? Dante asked one morning at breakfast. She hasn't let me know yet. Find out, will you? If we're not going, I was thinking it'd be nice to spend the holiday at Sugarbush, teach you how to ski. It took me until late afternoon to dial. Listening to the ringing, I saw Pierce Street outside, the front foyer, Grandma approaching the telephone. I closed my eyes and willed myself not to hang up. Grandma, it's me. Oh, yes, she said. There were voices in the background. Do you have company or something? I can call back. That's the television, she said. Oh, how are you? As good as someone with my arthritis can expect to be, I suppose. I was wondering if you got a letter I sent you? Those television voices. Then... I did. Yes. You did? Yes. So what do you think? What do I think about what? Well, would it be all right for Dante and me to come for Christmas? Of course it would be all right. Okay, great. I've been kind of waiting for you to get back to me. You're my granddaughter, aren't you? Why wouldn't it be all right? I don't want to bother with any tree, though. I haven't put up a Christmas tree since your mother passed on. I can understand that, Grandma. It's not important. Those needles stick in the carpet. They're there all year round, no matter how careful you are. You think you've gotten them all, and then in July, there some still are, sticking like burrs. I waited. Are you two shacking up? She said. Grandma. Well, I may be old-fashioned, but I'm not a nincompoop. Isn't that your young man who answered the telephone two different times when I called? Said he was a friend of yours or some such. We live in the same house, Grandma, in separate apartments. There was a pause. Then she said, Well, you're a grown woman now. I suppose if they can do it on the young and the restless. Grandma, do you remember those things I asked about in that letter? Do you think we'd be able to talk about some of them when I see you? It's not an easy thing, you know, planning a holiday dinner. Pies, potatoes. You have to start the turkey first thing in the morning. Do the stuffing the night before, of course.
Well, don't worry about that, Grandma. I can help you. Besides, Dante's a vegetarian.
What's that supposed to mean?
He doesn't eat meat.
You don't even have to bother with a turkey.
I thought you said he was a school teacher.
He is.
Well, am I wrong, or are those vegetarian people all hippies and some such? You know, young lady, if you're fooling around with drugs up there after all that other business you've been through, then you'd better think long and hard about what you're doing. You know what happened to poor Art Linkletter's daughter, don't you? Smoked some of that LSD business and took a bad trip, jumped right out of the window and killed herself.
Grandma, my apartment's in the basement. What I was trying to say in that letter is that sometimes I don't feel like I really know you. It's my fault as much as yours. We withhold ourselves from each other.
Don't know me? Of course you know me. What's that supposed to mean?
It means I don't know things like, well, things like how you and Grandpa fell in love, or what your life together was like.
She sighed, disgusted.
Now I know all this psychology stuff, or psychiatry stuff, or whatever the dickens you call it. I know it did some good with you, straightened out what that one upstairs did to you, and your mother's death. But your grandfather and I just worked hard all our lives, that's all. People didn't have time back then to stop and worry about things all the time. Pick things apart and such. It's water under the bridge. I've forgotten half of that business.
How did you first fall in love?
Now really, Dolores... Stop all this badgering. I'm a private person. Why stir up a hornet's nest?
Grandma, you can get private with me. I'm your flesh and blood. She cleared her throat.
Now I can give you a wedding, if you and this fellow would like. Nothing too fancy, but I have some money put aside. His name is Dante, Grandma. Of course, you'll have to decide whether you want to invite your father or not. That's your business.
Grandma, we haven't even discussed anything like marriage.
Well, I'm not surprised he hasn't. There's an old saying, you know, why should a man buy a cow when he can get the milk for free?
Grandma, are you happy for me? Are you glad I'm in love?
Well, of course I'm happy for you. What a thing to ask.
Grandma? I said.
Excuse me, she said. I'm putting the phone down now to check something. When she got back, her voice sounded different, harder. I'll say one thing, Dolores Elizabeth, and then, as far as I'm concerned, the subject is closed. I've buried a husband and two children. A 19-year-old son and a daughter who was only 38. She paused, cleared her throat twice, and I suddenly realized she was crying. If you want to love someone, then go right ahead. I know what love feels like. You and this young man didn't invent love. But the Lord Almighty doesn't give out any promises just because you love someone. Love only gets you so far. I listened to the labor of her breathing. I'll see you at Christmas, Grandma. I love you very much, if that's okay. What a thing to ask, she sputtered. Jeez. I hung up and began that night's dinner. Lentil loaf supreme. Poor Grandma was wrong. Dante and I had invented love, a kind she knew nothing about. If you risked love, it took you wherever you wanted to go. If you repressed it, you ended up unhappy like Grandma. 262 Pier Street, the house of repression, Ma had once said. And Dr. Shaw. Repression doesn't make it any easier, Dolores. It just wastes energy. I decided to tell Dante everything that night. My parents, Jack Spite, Kippy's letters, Dr. Shaw. I heard him reacting to the unburdening of my secrets in the same soothing voice he used on the phone with his crisis students, who he didn't even love the way he loved me. Whom he didn't love. Objective, not nominative case. The thought of telling the truth filled me with an enormous, exhausting calm, and I left the supper preparations and lay back on the daybed. "You're triumphant," I heard Dr. Shaw say, that night at the pool when I'd let out the truth. When Dante got home, he flung his briefcase so hard against the wall that it flew back at him. "Tell me something," he said. "Am I intense?" "Ah, what do you mean?" I said. It felt like a stranger had barged in. "Just what I said. Am I intense? You've heard of the word before, haven't you? That one's in your expansive vocabulary, isn't it?" There was a vein in his forehead. His whole body leaned toward me, waiting for my answer. I scrapped my planned confession. "Intense? No, you're not intense. Why?" "Because my vice principal thinks I am. Asshole Ev. I got my evaluation today. 3 needs improvements. He says I'm too intense." He threw open the refrigerator door and grabbed a beer. Then he went to his own apartment and slammed the door. In another 15 minutes, he came back for the rest of the six-pack. He pretended I was invisible. "Do you want a back rub?" I said. "Nope." "Do you feel like talking about it?" "It's like their whole philosophy of education at that school is fucked up." He looked over at me, accusingly. "It certainly sounds like it is," I said. "I mean, Ev Downs has sat on his ass parked in neutral for 25 years. I'm the only one at that whole goddamn school the kids can relate to, and I'm going to sit there and listen to him make it sound like I've got a fucking personality disorder." He over-exaggerated the word fucking, took extra pains with its pronunciation. "Well," I said, "try to forget it. I made lentil loaf for supper, and maybe afterward we can..." "That's it? Try to forget it? I made lentil loaf? Gee, I'm overwhelmed by your loyalty, Dolores. Thanks so much for your support." "I'm sorry," I said. "It's just that, well, you're kind of scaring me, and I don't know what to say." I began to cry. He watched me, curious, like a scientist. For the next 2 nights, I slept alone in my apartment, nursing my nervous stomach with Tums. Then on Thursday, a dozen yellow roses arrived for me at work with a card that said only, Love/Us. I put the flowers in a coffee can on top of my register. All day long, customers told me they were beautiful. When I'd catch the other cashiers looking at them, they'd jerk their heads away. That night, Dante wanted sex on the floor, not in the bed. He was rough and urgent. It hurt. But I kept my mouth shut, grateful for his love, no matter how he delivered it. "Hey, home ec," he asked me later. "On a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate me as a lover?" He had walked me over to the mirror and made us look at ourselves. He pawed me while he waited. 5.5, I said. 6, Dante. He looked at himself, then closed his eyes and smiled. In bed that night, I lay awake shaking because I'd come so close to telling him the truth. I'd lose him if I did. Those 2 nights without him had rocked me back to my senses. Home Eck was the person he loved. Not fat, crazy Dolores. Liar, letter thief, beached whale. He was his summer self again for a while, gentle and teasing. What would I have to do? I don't know anything about being a chaperone. I told him the night he said he'd volunteered us. A room full of high school students was not something I was looking forward to. Oh, you know, patrol the lavatory like a prison matron, breathalyzer tests at the front entrance, that sort of thing. Come on, Dante, I mean it. Don't sweat it, he said, kissing me. You're eminently qualified. The closest thing I had to a fancy dress was my flower print muumuu. I borrowed Dante's Volkswagen and drove to Burlington to shop. In a way, it was funny, I thought, me finally getting to go to a high school formal. I found the dress I wanted in a store run by 2 elderly sisters. Both wore their eyeglasses suspended on gold chains. The dress was an unpredictable choice for me, risky and overpriced. And it took me a whole afternoon's worth of shopping elsewhere before I finally returned to the store and surrendered to it. The gauzy material was smoky blue with silver thread running through it. The beadwork sewn into the bodice gave me a gypsyish look. The sisters made me try it on. Size 10 fit me better than size 12. "Fanny, look at this one on her," one said to the other when I emerged from the dressing room. Fanny reached down for her glasses. "Stunning," she said. "I use that word all the time with customers, but this time I really mean it." "And it falls beautifully on you," her sister said. "Twirl." I laughed and looked away from the full-length mirror. "I mean it," she said. "Twirl." I twirled. Slowly at first, then faster. The gathers of the dress unfolded themselves, and the material lifted up and outward. I opened up like a morning glory. "You're a beautiful young woman," Dr. Shaw's voice said. He was finally right. The sisters both applauded me. The three of us laughed. I wanted more. Back in the dressing room, I lifted the dress up over me, hung it on the hanger, and stopped. Some awareness was hovering on the surface, something that made the giddy feeling keep coming. My mind kept twirling. I reached beneath the elastic of my bra and felt my breasts. They were sensitive to my touch in a way that was both sexy and painful, a new feeling. The knowledge hit me so hard that I slumped to the floor, my shoulder blades skidding along the dressing room wall on the way down. "We were beginning to wonder if you'd fainted in there," Fanny joked. "Guess what?" I said. "I think I might be pregnant." Both women applauded again. Fanny took out her wallet and showed me her grandchildren's pictures. I don't recall the ride back to Montpelier. The nausea started about a week later. "We can give you Benedictine for the queasiness," the doctor at the clinic told me. Instead, I kept nibbling from my perpetual stack of saltines, swallowing tiny bits of banana I hoped my stomach wouldn't notice. I told Dante a bad stomach flu was going around at the store. At work, I tried not to look head-on at the food that passed by my conveyor belt. On break, I opened the window to let out people's cigarette smoke, then sat by the fresh air with my feet up. I'd hidden a bottle of cold duck in my clothes hamper for when I finally broke the news to Dante. By my sixth week, I had already let several deadlines slip by. On prom night, Dante dressed in his regular school clothes. Levi's, blue work shirt, brown corduroy jacket, incongruous tie. I made him go sit in his apartment before I took my new dress out of the plastic bag. I was withholding myself from him, like a bride. I hadn't thrown up once that day. The cold duck was in the refrigerator for after the dance. "Oh, wow," was what he said when he saw me. I had splurged and bought matching jeweled barrettes for my hair and a makeup job at Chez Jolie. "Am I really beautiful in this dress?" I asked him. 3 whole futures rode on his answer. "On a scale of 1 to 5, he said, "I'd give you a 6. In the dress or out of it." The dance had a theme. Time in a bottle. Girls began running toward Dante before we'd even crossed the length of the gym. He assigned me to a math teacher named Boomer and his wife Paula, and then let students sweep him off to the dance floor. The decorations were fishnets hung from the basketball hoops and filled with balloons and papier-mâché seashells. In the center of the gym, cordoned off by a 3-foot-high picket fence, were a giant cellophane bottle with a wall clock in its stomach and a mermaid propped up in a peacock chair. I recognized the mermaid as one of those life-sized rubber mouth-to-mouth breathing dummies. The decorators had stripped her of her sweatsuit and outfitted her with a paisley bra and a papier-mâché fish fin. Someone had pinned a hibiscus in her stiff nylon hair. Boomer talked only in monosyllables, but Paula made up for him, yelling chit-chat over the blare of the band. "You sure aren't like Dante's last girlfriend," she shouted. "What do you mean?" "Well, I don't know exactly. You just seem more like us. A faculty wife." Which meant frumpy, I guessed. Dress shields or no dress shields, it was too late to return the dress. I spent the first hour sitting on a metal folding chair in back of the punch table, collecting students' silent appraisals. A smile stretched across my face like a rubber band. Paula explained her life, how she was different from her 3 sisters, why she bothered to get braces at age 33, the gory details of the C-section that had produced her and Boomer's 3-year-old, Ashley Elizabeth. No one seemed to notice how beautiful I looked. I was surprised at how well-developed the high school girls were. I hadn't remembered those ripe fruit bodies when I was dodging everyone at Easterly High. But even at 240 pounds, high school had been a disembodying experience for me. I'd floated those 4 years of my life, had looked down at the linoleum and not returned a single stare. In another couple of months, my pregnancy would shape me like one of Dante's eggplants. Our bodies ourselves said some men were turned on by pregnant bodies, but I doubted that. I figured I knew more about the way men reacted to swollen women than that writer did. The students' filthy language shocked me. One girl, done up in banana curls and carrying a parasol, called her boyfriend a fucking douchebag right as I was passing them their cups of Neptune's nectar. The foam and the smell of it and the way she talked all made my stomach heave. Since my life with Dante, I'd stopped swearing as much. Not consciously, really. It had just happened.
Foul language is part of your armor of defense, Dr. Shaw was always fond of pointing out.
Dante only swore when he was angry, hurling the words like sharpened spears. From the dance floor, he managed to wave from time to time. A line of girls kept cutting in on each other to dance with him. I watched him make each dancer laugh and beam. He seemed like a celebrity actor making a guest appearance. Someone you could see and admire, but not talk to. He kept to the center of the room. During the band's break, I hooked my chin over his shoulder and collapsed against him. "Having a good time?" he asked. "You sure are popular," I said. He kissed me on the ear amidst the gaping.
"Dante, don't," I whispered. "I feel like I'm under a microscope or something."
"Well," he laughed, "you are."
Then the music started up again, and some girl tapped his shoulder. Back at the punch bowl, I asked Paula what Dante's last girlfriend was like. She reached inside her dress, fiddling with her bra strap.
"Well, her name was Raffaella. That should tell you something. She had a good idea of herself. At the end of the year banquet last spring, she wore this white jersey dress, and you could see her nipples plain as day. I hate when they do that. You're supposed to be too sophisticated to look, so the pressure's on everyone but her. She was that type, you know?"
Paula changed the subject to zucchini bread, but by that time I was panicky. Turning to check on Dante, I knocked smack into a passing student carrying three cups. Punch splashed down the front of my new dress.
"Oh, cheese whiz," Paula said.
"Cold water. It's the best thing for it. It was in Hints from Heloise last week. March right into that bathroom before it sets and get some cold water on it, icy as possible." The long row of bathroom sinks reminded me of Hooton Hall. So did the stairs. Two girls were standing in a cloud of cigarette smoke. They each had the same hairstyle, long in back, parted in the middle, bangs hot-combed into curls as tight as playing card jacks. I wet down the stain, then scratched at it with my fingernails and a wad of sopping paper towels. I recognized one of the smokers.
"Mr. Davis is a fox and a half," one of them began.
I looked up in the mirror at their staring.
"Really?" the other said. "I wouldn't throw him out of bed."
"Eddie, Anne!"
the other shrieked in mock horror.
"Shut your fucking mouth, girl!" "He could have sex with any girl in this school," she continued. "He doesn't need to visit the dog pound."
Her mirror image held my gaze, as if we were dueling. As if the one who looked away second would win Dante. I didn't feel angry. I felt maternal. In another 7 months, I'd be somebody's mother. Besides, her photo order had landed me here.
"Women, unite," I thought. I walked over to her.
"I want to tell you something," I said. "You can consider it a gift." Her mouth was smirking, but her eyes looked scared. She blinked.
"High school is like a sickness. Trust me. The fever breaks. Then you get over it."
Walking out, I heard their indignant laughter, louder than it needed to be.
"Some gift," Eddie Ann shouted. "What's her fucking problem?"
That night in bed, Dante came and I couldn't. When he fell asleep, I got up out of bed and crossed the hall to my apartment. My dress was hanging against the door. You had to go looking for the stain to find it. I could get married in that dress. I went back across the hall and climbed into Dante's bed. Our bed. That Raffaella could come back into his life tomorrow. I wanted him and the baby both, permanently.
"Dante," I said.
Wake up.
He squinted into the glare of the bedside light.
What?
He said.
What's the matter?
His eyelids were slits. I think I'm pregnant, I said.
Come on,
he smiled. I'm serious.
How?
He said. I told him I'd been careful about taking the pills. Religious was the word I used. It just happened, I shrugged.
Then we have to do something. I don't want any kids.
I waited before I answered. Why not?
Because I don't, that's all.
That's not a reason.
Because they shit their diapers and spill their milk at supper, I just don't want the fucking responsibility.
I lay on my back, rigid, tears dropping fast down the sides of my face. My mind was revving. I got out of bed to vomit.
When I came out of the bathroom, he was sitting up in bed, arms across his chest, staring at the ceiling.
But you love kids, Dante, I said. You call your students your kids. You act very paternal.
At least I thought he had, up until I'd seen him dancing with all of them. They'll probably blow up the planet in another 10 years. Having a child is irresponsible. We'd have to buy one of those stroller things. Life insurance men would start calling up.
No, they wouldn't.
Yes, they would. We'd have to push the bureau in front of the bedroom door whenever we wanted to fuck. Couldn't even say the word fuck anymore. Dolores, would you like to go make nice nice?
We just wouldn't let those things happen.
Sure we would. This friend of mine, Nick, perfectly intelligent mind, philosophy major in college. And now he knows all those dumbass Sesame Street puppets by their names, Bert and Bernie, or whoever the fuck they are, acts like they're friends of the family, for Christ's sake.
We can't decide anything right now, I said. Let's get some sleep.
Yippees, kiddies, it's time for Captain Kangaroo.
Okay, okay, I'm tired,
I get your point. You get it, or you agree with it. I'm tired. God damn it, Dolores. Now you've got me all riled up.
I'm sorry. I've got to calm down. Let's fuck again.
Stop calling it that.
I hadn't meant to scream.
See? He said. It's happening already.
After 10 minutes of silence, I reached for him. This time I did come, hard and fast, painfully. In the silence afterward, he got out of bed and dressed. Dante, where are you going? It's the middle of the night. At the door, he pushed me aside. I listened to the Volkswagen go down the hill and across town, keeping track of the sound for well over a mile. He kept his apartment door closed for a week. When he came home afternoons from school, he played music so loud it vibrated the walls. I couldn't tell if my vomiting was from being pregnant or being abandoned. Your test is positive, the woman from the clinic had told me over the phone the day I called in for results. If that's good news, you should come in for an appointment within the next week. If it isn't, there are options we can discuss. The sooner the better. I called in sick the entire week, spending the days crying, throwing up, and wishing I had never written to Grandma about love. I pictured myself living back in Easterly, in the house of repression, with a small daughter who never saw her father, having each day to get up and face Grandma, who knew love only got you so far. Our bodies ourselves said the preferred abortion procedure for someone at my stage was aspiration, that they would vacuum suction the fetus away from the wall of my uterus. Vacuuming, I thought. I'd be doing Dante's vacuuming. Later, when the phone rang, I was standing at the mirror marveling at how greasy hair could get if you didn't wash it for 5 days. Everything was like that, I thought. Ready to fall apart the second you looked away?
It's me, he said. Can I come over? I have something for you.
I flew around the apartment, picking banana peels off the chair arms, whisking saltine crumbs to the floor. I smeared some blush onto my greenish cheeks. There was nothing I could do about the hair. He looked handsome and well-rested. Don't look at me, I said. He handed me a sheet of paper. Here, he said. For you. I stared at his handwriting, but couldn't quite manage reading. It's a poem, he said.
What do you think?
I didn't know you wrote poetry.
I didn't, until last night.
I had this sort of heavy-duty epiphany about how much you needed me, and it just came out.
It's a love poem.
It was titled, Love/Us, like the card with my roses. It made no sense to me. My name was in it, but I couldn't find the baby. I started to cry.
You're moved by it, he said, smiling. I thought it was pretty good, too. I think it's publishable.
Dante, I said, we have to talk about the future.
But he would only talk about his future as a poet.
What about the baby? I said. He reached behind me and pulled me closer. He shook his head, no.